This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening, good day to you for Wednesday, February 27th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly. Good to have you with me and us. And of course, by us, I mean Dr. Vicki Hunter is with me.
Good evening. Good evening. Good to be here, Doug. Good evening, everyone. Good show tonight. They're always a good show.
Always. Good.
Always.
We appreciate everybody joining us. Whether you're joining us live program or the archive, doesn't matter. We appreciate your time and hope that it's beneficial to you. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. We have several educational programs in addition to this weekly radio show. We've got, of course, the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, where you can earn your doctoral degree in metaphysics, specializing in a variety of areas. There's also newageclass.com, where you can take certificate courses and certification courses there. So if you'd like more information about either one of those, metaphysicsinstitute.org or newageclass.com. Now tonight we're going to be talking about thinking for yourself, how to actually do that. Before we get into that, we'd like to do our profession of beliefs. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number 1, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number 3, we believe we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number 4, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number 7, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these 3 synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number 8, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. And number 9, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these 9 principles of belief, please visit mchschurch.org. Now tonight, we're going to be talking about how to think for yourself. And this is based a bit on principle of belief number 5. And I'll reread that one. It reads, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. I can't think of another topic that's perhaps not more controversial than religious beliefs and so forth. I mean, I guess there's politics, but we're not going to talk about politics tonight. More about thinking for yourself, you know, finding your own truth, discovering your own truth and walking your own path, as we've talked about on the show before. And so there's different aspects of how to think for yourself. And I'll just get this started and open it up. If you think about it, that term for a moment, that phrase, think for yourself, How many of us really, really think for ourselves? It's kind of hard in the world. We get bombarded with TV and news and all kinds of religious thinking and political thinking and this thinking and that thinking. And it can have an effect on us. It can, sway us one way or another. It's just part of life. But we have to almost, in a sense, put our foot down and just say stop and wait a minute. Does that make sense? Does that really make sense? And we're going to delve into that a little bit more. What say you, Dr. Vicki?
Well, I don't think there's a topic that could be more important. I think this is life. This is consciousness. So, this is my favorite topic, Doug. Well,
you're in
among
luck. We're
other
talking about
favorites.
It tonight.
Well, here's the thing. Rather than a supreme being, now think about that, something outside yourself, everything being outside yourself. From the time we're born, we are computing data into our brain about how we think the world operates. But inside, we have a spirit that's connected to all things also. So I think even from the very start of life, Doug, we're in a conundrum. Because we feel and think one way, but we're given messages another way. So we start out at a very young age, believing that truth is outside ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that all those other people are right. They must be right. But I think that this starts the dilemma, the identity dilemma, right from the onset of when you can actually start deciphering the world around and your own identity. Around the age of 4 or 5, kids start to see how they're different one from another. And, so-and-so has 2 TVs and we only have 1. That's what I mean. They start to see differences. And it tends to go in the way of they must be right, they must have more, therefore life is outside myself and I have to aspire to that. And I think that's where it all begins, where we surrender our own thinking. And it's to think for yourself to decipher what's right for you. What are you processing? What am I processing? How do I regard that? And to know that an opinion is okay. I have my own thoughts, my own consciousness, but we're all still connected. So life is not outside me. Life is inside me. And this is part of the deprogramming that we're all doing. So nothing, in my view, is more important than, isolating this topic for people to become more conscious. And, it's like honor the divine. Well, you are the divine. Mm-hmm. And begin with your own individuality. So it's that microcosm, macrocosm kind of thing, Doug, where, yes, it's all the big universe, but who am I in that universe? And what do I feel? What do I think? What do I do? And to be completely conscious and responsible of that. But critical thinking is a tough one. We see a shortage of it, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So, yeah.
Well, the entire IMHS degree program is really trying to teach people to think for themselves, teach students to think for themselves. And I want to delve into that whole concept a little bit deeper, because you think, oh, yeah, think for yourself. Oh, yeah, I think for myself. Heck, when I was a Christian, I thought I thought for myself, but I didn't. I'm pretty broad. I'm pretty broad-minded. Well, no, I wasn't. But I didn't know any better, at the time. And so let's delve into this whole thinking for yourself. Think about those words. Think for yourself. That means you determine what you believe. You determine what fits. And you use critical thinking skills. Now, critical thinking skills means to look at it critically. Now, critically does not necessarily mean negative. It just means use discrimination. Be discriminating in what you accept as your beliefs. Really think it through. Does it make sense? And we see so many areas that people believe, and belief is, as I've so often said, is the most powerful force in the universe. It starts wars, stops wars. It's responsible for where we're at, for our successes and failures in life. Everything is about belief. And so when we look at something, are we looking at it critically and analyzing it? There's so many aspects to this. And I'm just going to start since principle belief number 5 is about the divine energy, you know, we don't believe in a supreme God. Frankly, I outgrew God, and many people have outgrown God because God is an unnecessary concept. I can just feel, you know, the anti-Christian energy or the energy from Christians thinking, you know, you're going to burn in hell, dude. Well, you know, no, I'm not, because there is no hell, you know, other than perhaps at times here on Earth. But the point I'm trying to make is that what need is there for some supreme being outside of ourselves? I grew up learning that humanity or humans have this inherent need to look to something greater than themselves. And I'm thinking, you know, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that's the way I've always felt. That was back in the day. And now I think, why is that? There is nothing greater than myself. There is nothing greater than yourself. You know, so why do we need somebody like that? What's up with that? Do we want to know where we came from? Oh, sure. We all do. I'd love to know, you know. Am I saying there is no God? Yes. Am I saying there's no creator? No. You know, but there's so many possibilities in this universe of where we could have come from. You know, they're just, the universe just never ends. It keeps going on and on and on. You know, it's like, okay, first we thought the galaxy was our universe. And oops, no, that's not true. There's billions of galaxies. Okay, then we thought the universe just was, you know, the universe with billions of galaxies. And now we're hearing, oops, no, that's not it either. There's, you know, the multiple worlds theory or multiple universes. And then there's, you know, there's like one layer on top of another layer. So who knows where it stops? Who knows how far it goes up? So at what does that mean to here and now? It means, you know what, it's time to get rid of the supernatural friend in the sky. You know, what is he doing for your life here and now? And I mean really doing for your life here and now. You know, I had more problems as a Christian than I do without that stuff. It and so when you think critically, when you really think for yourself, that means you're not allowing other people, other religions, other people to tell you what to believe. Does it make sense to you? You know, and make sure that you don't carry along all the baggage beliefs from your childhood, that you were reared that way. And it takes time. Process it. But does it make sense to you? There's so many problems with the Bible. Read Thomas Paine's Age of Reason. Just read that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It no longer makes sense for who we are.
I think what it also does, Doug, to take it all a step further, and this is critical thinking. If I give the power of my life to a God, then, of course, I can absolve myself of responsibility because I'm forgiven, right? So I can just give it to God because yep. God's greater. I'm imperfect. I no longer have to be responsible. So, but it goes further than that. I go to the doctor. I give my life to the doctor. And the doctor says this, this, and this, and I'm no longer responsible. Now, of course, I'm not thinking that doctor might have a bad day. I'm not even thinking that might just be a stupid doctor. You know, I mean, and so I go to the MediCenter. I think that nurse is a responsible nurse. I don't have to be responsible. So we submit somehow. You know, we submit to all the authorities because we're no longer responsible. That's what believing in things outside yourself does. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't have respect for people in their selected careers, and we all serve each other, and that's the point. If I need a doctor, I go to a doctor. But I don't have to take that pill that doctor prescribed. You know, the doctor says, oh, you're depressed. Here's an antidepressant. No, I don't want that, thanks. Now, if I need something else, and I know at an interim, you know, and we can negotiate something because I am responsible for my body, my well-being, my health, my thinking, my emotions. The doctor's not responsible for me, but we give him responsibility. That's what happens where it starts out when you believe in a false God or something outside yourself. It bleeds everywhere into our lives. We believe in love. So we fall in love and we give our responsibility away because that's what love does. But we don't think about how does love act? And what's my part in being a loving human being? So that brings the responsibility back to the self. So this is my issue with how it begins, even as childhood, and believing in things outside yourself, because we surrender the responsibility of thought and our own care. So that's my soapbox, Doug.
Good one. So, and those are good points. So, you know, how can we go about thinking critically and thinking for yourself? Well, thinking critically simply, it's not passive thinking, that's for sure, thinking for yourself. It simply means analyze something. If you're taught a certain thing, analyze it. Does it make sense? You know, does it fit with other things? Is it congruent with other aspects? This hits every part of our life. I mean, look at Noah's Ark. Could not have happened. It's a logistical impossibility. It's a nightmare. Can you imagine?
Two of everything.
And seven of some others. And just the fresh water it would have taken. Oh, well, there's a miracle from God. You know, he provided.
The manure. The manure alone.
I mean, there's so many logistical issues with that scenario that it's like, okay, fine. And then you factor in that there's not a whole lot that's original, especially in the Old Testament. You know, there's variations of it, including the whole Messiah thing in ancient Sumerian texts. I mean, look it up. You know, it just so you take all this information in and you say, gee, that's not quite what I was taught. That's not quite the understanding I had, and yet there it is. And so that one thing leads to another, and you start looking at other things. And then you realize that, folks, we're born alone and we die alone, you know, more or less. I mean, it's up to us to make our life. It's up to us to take responsibility for who we are and for what we do, and to not say, oh, you know, I'm saved and I'm blessed and all. I mean, I was, gosh, several years ago, I think it was Atlanta, I was doing a seminar there teaching, and, you know, we were on a break, and I always greet hotel staff and so forth, and, you know, on my way around, and just, and everybody, you know, just who I am, what I do, I can't change, just kidding. Anyway, so there was a fellow there working on some lights, and I said, hi, how are you? And he says, what did he say now? And I'm running a blank. He said something to the effect of blessed and highly favored. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. Thanks for that. You know, and so here's something external to himself that gives him a reason to live. Now, you might say, well, gee, what's so wrong with that? Well, the problem with it, it's them esteem. I only feel good about myself when I'm doing what other people think I ought to be doing. So I'm getting the pats on the back and the kudos from, you know, my religious leaders, from my family, from my boss, whoever it is. But I only feel good about myself when they think I'm doing good. So therefore, I esteem them more than I esteem myself. And that's the problem with it. You know, looking to something outside of yourself is them esteem. It is unhealthy. It is not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to stand up on our own two feet, be complete within ourselves. You know, we have everything we need within us to accomplish anything. Does that mean you don't ask for advice? No. It doesn't mean that you don't seek knowledge outside of yourself, because then you bring it in. What it means is that you don't rely on other people to determine what you believe. Even me talking right here, right now, hopefully you're thinking critically. You might have even said, you know, he's full of it here and there. Well, no, I'm not. I can back up pretty much everything I'm talking about here. It all fits. It's reasonable. It's compelling. And that's the point. Can you say that what you believe is reasonable? Is it grounded? Is it objective? Is it compelling? Does it make sense? Are there holes in it? Can somebody who's objective and grounded pick it apart? Well, if they can, then you got some more work to do. You need to think it through a little bit more. One of the other areas that is so rife with emotional thinking is the paranormal research field, especially and specifically the ghost hunting aspect, the amateur part of it. You know, it's like belief in orbs. You know, and there he goes. He had to bring up orbs. You know, it's those little balls of light that appear in all these digital photographs that so many people try to push off as spirits. No, they're not. You know, Occam's razor says that the simplest explanation is likely the correct one in the absence of any other evidence. Well, we don't have any further evidence. All we've got is these balls of light that started to appear mysteriously with the advent of digital compact cameras, where the flash is close to the lens, creating all these little balls of light, which are simply airborne contaminants, dust, rain, moisture, whatever. They're not spirits. There's nothing in there to tell us it's paranormal, and yet so many people take this leap of faith and say, oh, yeah, that's a spirit, because we were asking him to appear. We were thinking about dead old Aunt Margaret, and here she was, you know, in this ball of light. And it's a leap of faith. There's no grounded reason to go there, and yet so many do. Well, that's just one example. There are many, and it goes into religion, and it goes into all these other things. Be down to earth. Be grounded. Have your feet on the ground here. You know, doesn't mean that this stuff doesn't happen. I mean, I've interviewed several people who've actually seen these orbs with their naked eye. Okay, now we're talking about something completely different. We can't easily dismiss that, especially if the witnesses are credible. You know, it goes with UFOs and all these other stuff, Bigfoot, all kinds of mysterious things going on that we can't explain yet. And it doesn't mean that they don't exist. It's just we can't explain them yet. But at least we've got some good evidence, some compelling basis to go there. You know, we're not just taking these leaps of faith. 95% of all this paranormal stuff can be explained with misidentification, client psychology, hoaxing, not as much, but it's there. And it can be explained, naturally occurring stuff. But then there's that 5% that's not so easily explained.
Well, you nailed it earlier, Doug, asking a lot of questions. You know, and that is the thing. You have to be able to ask the questions. What does this mean? And take the thinking a step further. You know, imagine how it connects. When you learn one thing and then another thing and another thing, how do they connect? Is there a thread of information that makes it credible? You know, it's how to connect the dots, so to speak. But you got to keep asking questions. To just accept something at face value is when we have surrendered our thinking.
Let's jump on that point. Let's connect some dots. Let's play that game for a moment. Let's talk about an interesting piece of science from Cleve Baxter back in the 60s, and I think I even mentioned this last week, where he connected a polygraph machine to a plant and got a response from just thinking about what would happen if I burned the plant. He didn't even light a match, and the plant reacted. Well, that was nothing short of astounding, and it was repeated many times with not just plants, but bacteria and some other things. And it's just fascinating stuff. Okay, well, we've got some evidence now that suggests that we're all connected. Everything's connected. How else can you explain that kind of a thing? Okay, so plants can pick up on something. Now, this is something I've been thinking about for quite some time. You know, what's the difference between something that's alive and something that's not alive? Well, something that's alive has a, for lack of a better term, a measure of consciousness inherent in it. Now, obviously, a human being has more consciousness than an animal, a tree, a plant, a microbe, that kind of a thing. So there's just these varying levels of consciousness, along with it, sentience, meaning self-awareness, and the ability to reason on things. But there's all these various levels. Okay, if we're all connected, then does that mean that inanimate objects are sentient or have feelings or think? Well, you tell me. You know, I've seen people who think that rocks and crystals and different things that, you know, have thoughts and emotions and feelings, and I'm having a hard time with that one. Really? It's a rock. You know, it's a car. I mean, does my car have a measure of consciousness? I know my computer does. Sometimes it's trying to break into consciousness because it's got a mind of its own, but that's a whole different story.
Well,
I'm joking here.
You brought up a point. Can the rock be a conduit of energy based on the frequency of energy that it has? See, now we're posing another question.
And that's a different question than does the rock think?
Yes.
You know, and then we get into another aspect. Okay, to what degree does our own consciousness, our own deliberate intent affect things? For example, I can have a lucky whatever, rabbit's foot or rock or something of sentimental value given to me, something that I associate my lucky shirt, for example, whatever. Is it lucky? No, but maybe I feel lucky when I'm wearing it or when I have it in my pocket or whatever. You know, but that's a whole thing with me. It has nothing to do with an inanimate object. And yet people will ascribe these thoughts and feelings to these things. And without any basis. And this is a problem in the fringe New Age community too. There's so many of these things that they're pushing and teaching, and it, you know, it's on the fringe. There's no compelling basis for some of this stuff.
Well, and this is where we have to reach a point in our humanity that's okay to say, I don't know. You know, look, lots of people ask me a lot of questions, Doug, and I say, I don't know. I have a theory. As a matter of fact, I probably have five theories, and I have one that works for me. But even if that theory works for me in my belief system, I will stand to be corrected based on these other theories in the event there's more information about that. We live in the kind of world that really likes to take pride in knowing something, being smart, and that it has to lead to an answer to feel a sense of purpose. And basically, there's a lot of people out there that sell garbage. Mm-hmm. And that's to make money. Because you can always find an audience to buy something, Doug. So, but I think that there's something kind of, well, I'm not going to say it's wrong because everybody's on their journey. But it would be wrong for me because I know better. Because I keep asking the questions. Mm-hmm. And I'm the first one to say, I don't know. So that's why I also can't judge people, even though I have an opinion. I can't judge people for believing that those rocks work, you know, or there's, you know, the hot rock therapy and massage and stuff. Well, I'll tell you, it'd be a cold day in hell before somebody comes near me with a hot rock. That's for sure. But
well, you know, hot packs, same thing. I mean, it's warmth and muscles, so it works.
But I don't know how hot that rock is. I don't know who's facilitating. You see, so these are my questions. But it's okay to say, this is my point, it's okay to reach a point in our evolution and in our stages of life to say, wow, I just don't know. And,
yes.
You know, along the way, I have said, and you've said, Doug, and, you know, it's like I get to the point where the more I know, the less I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more I know, the less I realize that, I, you know, that what I thought I knew doesn't mean anything. But it helped me along the way because everything is a progress. Everything's an evolution. But truly, there are some things that I can feel very comfortable to say I know about. And I know myself. And then I keep learning about myself because I haven't been in certain situations before.
Mm-hmm.
As I encounter a situation, I go, wow, I didn't know that. And it's okay to not know something. And it's
yes.
okay to explore it. And I think this is part of the thinking process that people shut down. I've seen this where if the question is too big or poses too many, you know, other possibilities, they just shut down and say, well, no, that's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different kind of I don't know. But in the I don't know of knowledge means this is just a theory. But you can take it many, many layers of knowing yourself to say, I know who I am in this kind of situation. I know how I am this. I know what's in my nature. I know how I think. and keep asking yourself the questions of, why did I respond that way? Could I respond differently? What made me think that? Oh, as a matter of fact, what was I thinking? You know? And so that's the self-study, and that is about the thinking. And then when we know about the self, then we can take the thinking into what we're observing outside ourselves. And along the way, all I want to say in this point is it's okay to say, I don't know.
And that goes right along with thinking for yourself, because sometimes we don't know the answers. And we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. And this is a problem a lot of people encounter. Oh, no, that's what I was taught, and I'm right about that. Well, no, you're not, or you might not be. You need to think it through and not take offense. It's okay to say, I don't know, or it's okay to here's another thing that's okay. If you learn something new that changes your theory or your hypothesis, that's fine. Change. Update your knowledge bank. It's okay to not be right at times. And it goes with human psychology, that need to be right. I need to be right. Well, you don't need to be right. It doesn't matter. We're trying to find answers. And if something comes along, like to me, like for example, if somebody brought me evidence tomorrow, tonight, that some of these orbs shown up in pictures are really spirits, and it was compelling, I would change my tune in a heartbeat. And that's okay. I don't need to be right about that. I just want to know what the truth is. You know, could a spirit be in an orb in a photograph? Sure, why not? Do we have any evidence to suggest that? Not really, not at this point. You know, and I need something compelling. But if you got that, I'm willing to reassess that and say, okay, I've changed my tune on this one. I've updated my knowledge. You know, I don't need to be right about it. What I need to know is what's real. What's the truth on it? And that's part of thinking for yourself and thinking critically and being grounded and not letting emotional thinking and the need to be right, because that's directly tied into people's self-esteem or lack thereof. Just search for what's right and what's real. And the things that you bring in, how are they helping you today? The things that you believe, how are they helping you? You know, if you look at your life right here, just take a snapshot of your life. That is the sum of your beliefs. Whatever situation you find yourself in is there. You're there because of what you believe, because of decisions you've made, choices you've made. And that's where you're at. So if you want a different life, you make different decisions. And if to make different decisions, you got to think differently. You got to think for yourself and think critically.
Well, Manisha has a question regarding energy, Doug, in the chat room. Could you please throw some light on if things in our house, office, and so on absorb and store vibrations generated around them?
Well, that's...
I have my opinion, but...
Oh, you go ahead and I'll offer mine.
Well, I think anything that's an absorbent can store energy, and there's residual energy, and we know this about spirits too. There's a difference between a residual, you know, and if you're hypersensitive, such as I am, you can feel a residual energy as opposed to, let's say, a grounded spirit. And I think there's a vibe in just about everything, but what I also believe is that it can be changed with a thought. So I really want to qualify that. So do things absorb energy? I think that we all leave a residual energy, kind of like if you've worn perfume and you've left the room, but the perfume is still there. You know, I think that it's that same kind of thing. When two people mingle energy, you know, you're kind of not alone with your body. And one of the things that I incorporate into some of the work I do in therapy is that if you're trying to, if let's say you broke up with somebody and you're trying to shake them, then call your own spirit back. Like picture their face in your mind and call your own name out loud so that that residual energy that you have given away of yourself, psychological or not, it's still, you know, that residual energy, pull it back. So, and if you, you know, someday you don't feel quite yourself, it's because you've allowed their energy to stay around your energy too much. This is why, you know, independence and in knowing your autonomy and who you are. No matter what kind of relationship you're in, your identity must always stay intact. Otherwise, we lose that identity. But I think it certainly is, there's energy that goes with that. But again, it can be changed in a thought.
And a lot of that energy is just with us. If our thoughts are obsessing on somebody else or something else,
absolutely,
we're giving our power away. You know, that's my panacea for everything that ails you, is to take your power back. You know, reclaim who you are. Think for yourself. Know who you are and why you are who you are. And in terms of our surroundings absorbing or storing energy, there's always the stone tape theory. And you know, in the paranormal field, there, as Vicki mentioned, there's residual, quote, hauntings, and then there's intelligent-type hauntings. The residuals are theorized to be embedded on, honestly, the very fabric of space-time in some ways. Very emotional incidents can almost be recorded on, well, space-time as a media, you know. And when I say media, a cassette tape has media. A CD-ROM is media. It's a media to record. Well, some have theorized that geological formations such as quartz and granite and different things can store emotional energy. I don't know that that's true, but I don't know that it's not. One thing I do know and believe is that consciousness is powerful, and it is directly related to space-time. So with very, very emotional incidents, that's why some people will see almost a scene played out, a brief one, that between a person or two or whatever, that was a very emotional event, and it can be triggered. We don't know how it's triggered, but it can be triggered randomly. It could be triggered at different times, and people will witness this stuff, and it's like they're seeing a dead person, but that person is not sentient. They're not real. It's just it's like a videotape playing over and over again.
Manisha, also, sorry, Doug, were you finished with that sentence?
Yes, I was.
Okay, sorry. Sometimes with Blog Talk Radio and Skype, there is a bit of a delay sometimes, so it's not that we're meaning to bump into each other. It's just that's the way it works. Manisha is also asking in the chat room if we believe that there's a consciousness in non-living things. Well, I would ask then, what is a non-living thing? Because I think consciousness is all things and all things connected. But if I can just, and I know you've got lots to say about it too, Doug, but, you know, I live in the mountains, and the mountains is a really powerful energy. But I could also give you a whole bunch of reasons of why I think that is. I've been to Sedona, Arizona, and it's extraordinary with the red rock. People would say, is there a consciousness there? Well, there's claims of vortexes or energy spots. And I think consciousness, in that word, we have to understand that it is the energy that binds all of us, and how conscious we are and how conscious it is, we just don't know. You know, but I think we're all connected, and I think we're connected with living things, but who's to say a rock isn't a living thing if it's an ever-changing thing? We just define living by our own view. So,
well, yeah, but that term living, like the living a rock formation can be dynamic, meaning it changes with due to weathering, and that could be talked, you know, said that. But if we talk about in the sense of something being alive, a rock is not alive, and you know, so does it have consciousness? Well, no, unless there's some compelling reason to believe that it does, which there, to my knowledge, there isn't. Does it have energy? Well, everything is energy. You know, are we all connected? Yes, we're all connected on a variety of levels. For example, we're all connected because we're all human beings. So we have a relationship because we're all human beings. We're all connected because we're all here listening and joining in on this program together. So that's another connection we have. We might live in the same country. There's another connection we have. You might be one of my students or a graduate. There's another connection we have. So there's a lot of connections that we have on a variety of levels. You know, so when you ask or when a question like that is asked, you know, is something that's non-living have consciousness? Well, what are the reasons why it does have consciousness? And what are the reasons why it doesn't? And so we have to, as Peter Sturrock, he was a researcher, scientist, he basically said, what are the facts and what do those facts tell us? Well, when you look at something, what are the facts and what do those facts tell us? We can apply that to anything, even like religion. I mean, even the Bible talks about faith. You know, that faith is not facts. Faith is not evidence. And it could, you know, Apostle Paul goes on to talk about how we have evidence, blah, blah, blah. That's not true. Faith is faith. Facts are facts. So what are the facts and what do those facts tell us? That's another way to think for yourself and to think critically.
If I can just inject, Doug, I think that some people might define living as something that breathes air, you know.
Well, it's not necessarily true.
I know, but that's how some people might define it, so that's what their belief would be.
Well, and defining what actually constitutes a living thing is a whole nother show.
Yes, it is. It is. But that's just to add in for a question like what Manisha is asking and any other listeners, you know, who might be thinking that. There's so many definitions and beliefs, and we just keep peeling the layers and asking the questions. Mm-hmm. So and respecting that, you know, we're really just beginning, I think, as a conscious species to explore who we are in relation to the universe. I mean, we've been trying to do it for eons, Doug, but we're now just grasping just how magnificent our universe is and our relationship with that universe.
Mm-hmm. And there's one last question, too, that we want to address from Dr. Philip here. Could you please comment on how do you deal with the concept of thinking for ourselves and society's tendency to label it as selfishness in the material world? And my answer to that is I really don't care how people label it or what they think. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter to you either. What matters to me is, you know, what's the truth of the matter? What are the facts and what those facts tell us? If people want to call me selfish, that's their stuff. I live my life trying not to be selfish, you know, and when I see an area that I might be selfish in, then I change, you know, and
respect for free will.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you think I'm selfish? Great. Good for you. Now move on. I don't care. I just don't care anymore. I used to care, but you know what? I put myself out there and I risk, just like I am tonight. You know, I just told everybody there's no God. Well, to a lot of people, that's blasphemous, and I have it on good authority that I am now a heretic. You know, I was so told. So, anyway, I hope that helps, Philip.
Another good show, Doug. Boy, it goes by fast, and for our new listeners and our usual regulars, we're now taking our show down to 45 minutes.
Yeah. So. And it's a little easier. Everybody's so busy, and everything's so fast-paced, you know, so next week we'll have another topic. We'll post that as soon as we can determine it, but based on principle of belief number 6 in some way. We do appreciate you taking your time with us, and let others know. And please visit mchschurch.org as well as www.oneplanetaccord.org for the One Planet Accord. We talked about that last week, and you can post that flag on your website. So thanks to everybody for listening. We appreciate it. Until next time, I hope you listen, think, learn, live, and grow, or something in that order. Have a great week, you guys. Good night.
Good night.